Here we are with one of our favorites of all times, Congressman Joe Courtney, Democrat of Connecticut's 2nd District, in office since 2007. Hey, Joe, one of the things I love about your district so much is, of course, that you have some water as opposed to only the mountains. This is pretty nice for you, right?
It is. And, it's a whole array of issues, and including one that we voted on this past week, which was there's an island, Plum Island, which is just off of Old Saybrook, halfway to Long Island, that for some of the conspiracy fans out there has been a lot of speculation, because that's where the USDA did a lot of their experimentation on different animal diseases. And Jesse Ventura claims that Lyme disease, came out of Plum Island because of tests that took place, that mosquitoes are now, ticks are now, spreading across the country with Lyme disease. I mean, who knows? But anyway, that facility was shut down at the end of the Bush administration. It's now in Kansas, which frankly makes no sense to put it out in the middle of a food belt out there, but that's what they did. And how that property gets disposed of is a very hot issue. The Bush administration and Obama administration actually had on the books a proposal or a law that said it had to be sold to the highest bidder, which is very unusual for federal property. Normally, there's other options that has to be explored before it just gets put out on the marketplace. There are 200 species of birds on that island. It's an incredible place, just because of the fact that no development was permitted because of the nature of the USDA lab that was there. And we got an amendment in the Commerce Justice funding bill last week, which actually prohibits GSA from putting it up for sale. There's another bill that myself and Congressman Zeldin across the Sound, as well as Tom Suozzi from Long Island and Rosa DeLauro in New Haven, that would basically just completely preserve Plum Island as a, as is, which again is very unique, just because it was never sort of subject to any kind of development, and it would be open to educational and conservation use, but that's it. It would not be a golf course, or when I'm a golfer, so I'm not anti-golf, but I just feel like that really should not be what happens to Plum Island. And we were really happy that the amendment passed last week, and we're going to keep working to get the final product, which is not to just take it off the market, but to actually give it full preservation status.
I actually have two questions that are may seem silly. Number one, what kind of plums? Are those beach plums?
Yes.
I love beach plums. So that's the first thing. And number two, don't all of those birds, those 200 varieties of birds, don't they eat ticks?
They do. So we
you see?
Yeah, so Jesse may be wrong,
Well, it occurred to me that we don't have Jesse anymore, but we sure have ticks.
Right. No, that's true. And I mean, actually, it's a very serious issue.
Yes, it is.
And Lyme disease now, again, there's different variations of it in Colorado that have shown up in terms of tick-borne illness. And we actually got some funding at the NIH to really step up research, into this, because it's a hot topic, in the medical community and in the health insurers community about, different forms of treatment. If people see a tick bite and that it's like a circle that forms around
sure.
it, you should get in to see a doctor ASAP. The one thing we do know is, some dose of antibiotics can actually stop it early. If it stays too long, then it becomes very, very
people die.
No, it is, and it's a chronic illness that can really disable people.
No question.
But we're not doing Plum Island to preserve ticks. It's really about all the other critters, the good ones that are out there.
So we've gone through the first presidential debates. What do you make of them? Did you see winners and losers, or what do you think?
I mean, there clearly were winners. In the polling shows that, now that it's sort of been digested for a while. I mean, number one, I would just note that the substance of the debate, even though, it was contentious at points, in my opinion, was much higher quality than the cast of thousands Republican debate that took place 4 years ago. I mean, they were having serious exchanges on a whole host of issues. And, you know, some of it got personal in terms of people's record, you know, the Harris-Biden exchange. But, you know, but to me, you know, how people voted on something or a position that they took, that's legitimate debate, you know, not, you know, pointing at people and saying you have small hands or, you know, the stuff that went on 4 years ago. And it's early. I've been talking to a lot of Democrats who have some heartburn about the fact that, you know, they think it's maybe too contentious. But as I said, the 17 months is a long haul, and it's inevitably there's going to be a winnowing process. And this was the first step. It had to be inclusive enough to avoid being, you know, viewed as just the National Party trying to wire this nomination, which is the accusation, of course, from 4 years ago. And then, but it's also got to be, you know, aimed at, it's not going to be an endless debate. That's a strategy for failure, in my opinion.
Well, if I'm any example, and I suppose this is the wrong thing for an interviewer to say, but, you know, I certainly had some very good thoughts about Biden, and I still do. Nevertheless, I was terribly impressed with, even though I come from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren's territory, I was incredibly impressed with Harris.
Yeah, I mean, she, again, had a great rollout when she first announced. Again, with the deluge of other candidates, you know, people were starting to wonder whether, you know, she just sort of had, you know, shot, you know, her ammunition there all in one fell swoop, but obviously she really stood out, and she showed very, you know, poised and focused as a good lawyer. You know, she clearly knows how to present in front of a large group that was there, and she showed some toughness, and, you know, that that's part of this. I mean, and it, you know, politics ain't beanbag, and it's not a gentlemanly, ladylike debate. I mean, you've got to show that you can really, you know, present a position forcefully, and she sure did that.
Because a lot of people are going to be saying, okay, how would this one or that one stand up against Donald Trump?
Yep. No, I mean, that's clearly where this is going to end up in the summer and fall of 2020. And, you know, debates matter in these presidential elections. I mean, they just, the you know, the audience, very different than congressional debates and even U.S. Senate debates. I mean, you just don't have the same, you know, incredible focus that presidential debates create. And, you know, I mean, we all can remember stories of, you know, Mike Dukakis in the second debate, you know, really, you know, faltering. And, you know, Mondale, you know, in the Reagan-Mondale debate, particularly the second one, just getting overwhelmed. And so this is important. It's not just a, you know, just kind of a political junkie thing. It's really, you know, testing people's mettle.
No question. You know, I wanted to ask you a question because you were a congressman, brilliant congressman in my mind. And we now have an issue of identity politics. How much does that matter? Does it matter that you're a woman? Does it matter that you're not a woman? Does it matter that you're gay? Does it matter that, you know, that you're Jewish or Catholic? How much does that matter in our politics? I know it's not an easy subject for anybody to discuss, but is it important?
So, you know, I'll give you a little snapshot. You know, every week we kind of do a tally in our office about, you know, the email and snail mail that we get in. And sure. We just sort of obviously try to gauge just, you know, at a top line level, just, to, you know, what's really on people's minds. Why are they calling their congressman and writing to their congressman? And last week, we did our usual tally, and number one was the cost of healthcare and prescription drugs. And you know, I thought that was really interesting because, you know, the Mueller report and impeachment was certainly there. Climate change was certainly there. And issues of identity politics were certainly there. But if you look, you know, week in and week out, it's still, you know, in my opinion, the bread and butter issues that stand out in terms of just, you know, what, and at least in Connecticut, too, you know, people are most concerned about. You know, the politics of identity can, in my opinion, you know, go overboard, in my opinion. But on the other hand, it is important because about the fact that, you know, we have to be having this discussion about inclusion and diversity, because that's really where the country's going, and it's not just a Democratic Party issue. It's about how we make sure we have a workforce that's going to look different, you know, 20 years from now and 30 years from now, because of just the population and demographic makeup in terms of where the country is headed. And we do need to be breaking down barriers to make sure that people have access, across the board, you know, whether it's education, job training, running for political office. And in my opinion, you know, the Democratic Party is on the right side of history because we are a party that is willing to talk about and do, you know, act in terms of trying to be more inclusive. And I think, you know, if you look across the aisle in the House of Representatives, I mean, you see that there's a party that is really tone deaf on that point. And I think over time, that is really going to be certainly damaging, you know, to the future of that party. And our party, I think, is going to thrive because we have, I think, you know, recognize this and tried to, promote inclusion and diversity in terms of policymaking across the board, including how our party operates.
It was fascinating to watch young Trump, not so young anymore, get his head handed to him for writing bad things about Kamala Harris. Almost every Democratic candidate came down heavily on him because he had said she's not really African-American because one parent was Indian and the other was Jamaican. What do you make of that?
Again, that's the tone deafness, which in that case was much cruder and offensive than usual. But, unfortunately, again, you talk to folks in the Republican Party who are really the ones looking at the long game, they realize that kind of approach is just, it's over time, that is a dead dog loser. And again, I was proud of the fact that all the other candidates who, let's face it, this is a hyper-competitive process that they're in the middle of, just uniformly jumped up in her defense. I mean, that says a lot about our party.
Joe Courtney, Congressman Courtney from the beautiful 2nd District of Connecticut. When we come back the next time, let's do some foreign policy, okay?
Great.